Blog Talk Radio.
Namaste and blessings. This Swami welcomes you with great love and great respect from the heart of all. This is Meditative Living with Swami Shivananda Giri, bringing you the teachings, the blessings, and the Shakti of His Holiness, Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj of Los Angeles, California, who in 2007 became the very first white-skinned American-born human being invited into the rank of the Mahamandaleshwars. These 80 human beings actively manage Sanatana Dharma on this planet, or what most people would more commonly refer to as Hinduism. Today, if you've been following along with this series, we are covering a book called the Chidakasha Gita of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri. Bhagwan Nityananda was the guru of this Swami's guru. Okay? So, stepping back in time from where we are right now, okay, you interact with this Swami. This Swami represents the Guru, His Holiness Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj. His guru was Swami Baba Muktananda Paramahamsa of India. And before him was Bhagwan Nityananda. This book is all sayings that Nityananda spoke, and then commentary written about those sayings. Because you see, Nityananda himself, who left the body in Mahasamadhi in 1961, rarely spoke. He was not the type of being who would sit and give long lectures on things. That just wasn't his way. He was an avadut. An avadut is one who is absolutely free, completely enlightened, liberated, and has been so for the majority of their life. For one born an avadut, the educational process here on the earth for them is far more about how to be like a normal person than how to expand their consciousness, because their consciousness is already expanded. That is their natural state. And most people who see them or get around them, they're extremely confusing people because they don't see things or think of things the way the normal population does. And this book, Chittakasha Gita of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri. Ganesh Puri was the town in India that grew up around Nityananda. It had just been jungle and a few small tribes living in this area. Well, then Nityananda stopped there. And eventually a whole community grew up around him. Kings and prime ministers and scientists and other yogis of all kinds of traditions would come to see Nityananda, because Nityananda was something very different. It was not just your normal dogma preaching Swami or representative of some tradition, because he was not like that. This book itself, he did not write. He didn't write anything. He barely spoke. But over a period of, I think it was around 7 years, devotees and disciples of Nityananda started making notes of when he would say things, and they would make note of this, and they put it all together, and eventually it became primarily through the work of a woman named Tulsi Amma. These things, these sayings were collected up and turned into the Chittakasha Gita of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri. So he didn't actually write a book. He would speak on occasion, sometimes very simple things that would be so deep in meaning, but he most times wouldn't explain this stuff. You got to understand, his method of teaching was much more subtle. So what we're going to do is start with verse 54, When I read a verse, I will say, Nityananda said. Then, when that is over, we will move to the commentary written by a man named Acharya Kedar, which will be somewhat explaining what it was that Nityananda said. And if this Swami feels there is any extra to be added, then after reading Acharya Kedar's commentary, this Swami will add something in there. Okay? So, here we go. Verse 54. Nityananda said, he is a jnani. A jnani means a knower who has given up worldly pleasures and, by practicing yoga, seen God. Ananda, or bliss, is not in what you hear. Bliss is a matter of experience. Such a man is called a Mahatma. Mahatma means great soul. Those who have seen earthen and stone images do not become Mahatmas. Is a Mahatma who knows himself. That ends Nityananda's verse. Acharya Kedar's commentary. A jnani is a knower of the self, with a big S, the universal self. One can only know the self. One can only know God by giving up all expectations of sense pleasures and worldly pleasures, and by ending the mad search for these. Then, with steady spiritual practice, one sees God. The bliss of Shiva cannot be experienced by listening to what others say they have experienced. It can only be experienced for oneself by going inside. It cannot be had from the worship of statues either. To know God, you have to experience him inside your own being. The one who does so continually is a Mahatma, a king of kings. The Swami will add nothing at this point. Verse 55. An Avadhut has conquered death and birth. He has no consciousness of the body. An Avadhut has gone beyond all gunas. The gunas are the three qualities. Okay, the qualities, the three qualities being tamas, which is the lower, slower, depressed, dark, ignorant. Rajas is the active, passionate quality. And sattva is the balanced, pure quality. Those are the three qualities that we engage in and a mixture thereof as a human being. These are the gunas. He is the knower of the omniscient. He has no consciousness of the I, the bodily I. Such is a Raja Yogi, not a Hatha Yogi. Hatha Yogis are all about their bodies. That's a step in the yogic process, but cannot, does not, and will not ever get one to the top. It's good, it's healthy, it's all that stuff, but it's got nothing to do with enlightenment. Speaking of an Avadhuta again, when he comes to a village, he feels glad, whomsoever he may see. He has no consciousness of duality, though he moves here and there. He has no hunger, plentifully if he gets plenty of eatables. If he does not get, he will not ask anybody. Those who give to him poison and those who give to him milk are the same to him. Those who beat him and those who love him are the same to him. To an Abadut, the universe is the father, the mother, and the relation. He becomes the universe, and the universe becomes him. The universe is merged in him, in the Avadut. Stepping aside from Nityananda's words there, note, at times in his spontaneous, Bhagwan Nityananda would describe some of the qualities of a siddha. A siddha is a perfected being, so that people could understand how to recognize a siddha. This is one of those moments. Now, on to the commentary of Acharya Kidar. An avadut is a siddha, a perfected master of yoga. Now, when we say yoga, we are not talking about hatha yoga, which is the yoga of postures and stretching. You know, the stuff you see them do at the YMCA. Yoga is only that practice that causes you to be liberated and God-realized. Such a person is not attached to their body. And although a siddha may be physically fit, he or she is only conscious of Shiva and recognizes their physical body as Spanda Shakti, as the energy of Shiva, not merely flesh. An avadut is one who is no longer bound by the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Having risen above virtue and vice, pleasure and pain, the activity of the gunas does not affect such a being because he or she has given up the craving for sense pleasures. Such a person accepts what comes to him unsought. His equilibrium is not affected by changes in his circumstances from good to bad or from bad to good. An avadut considers all people to be God, whether they are friend or foe. Such a being does not differentiate between those who beat them and those who love them. To such a siddha, only God exists everywhere, and God is the father, the mother, and all the relations. To an avadut, the relationship between husband and wife does not exist. It is a relationship between Shiva and Shiva. To a siddha, the relationship between father and son does not exist. It is a relationship between God and God. An avadut is a liberated being who has realized that the entire universe is contained inside himself and is reflected on his own inner screen. This state is the result of Raja Yoga practiced under the direct guidance of a Siddha master and is not attainable by Hatha Yoga alone. Such a being is merged in God, regardless of his outward appearance and manner. Moving on to verse 56. In pranayama refers to breathing techniques, most most of the time. In pranayama, puraka is drawing up the breath. Kumbhaka is retaining in the breath. Richaka is exhaling the breath. These three kinds of breath are from within. Nothing is taken from outside. While thus the practice is going on, the prana will move only in one nerve. We then feel the internal joy. Who can describe this pramananda? Brahmananda, excuse me. The outside world will then be forgotten. We will then be in the world beyond. Acharya Kedar's commentary. Pranayama is a specific meditation technique that involves instruction in how to direct the breath into the central nerve, also known as the subtle body or the Sushumna Nadi. This central channel is one of three channels in the body. Pranayama is a technique that involves puraka, which is the inward breath, downward breath, and richaka, which is the upward and outward breath. And the retention of breath while focusing on the pause or space between the breaths. That's usually referred to as kumbhaka. When instructed properly, this movement of breath is directed inside the sushumna, and while continuing to move, remains in the sushumna nadi. While the breath moves in the central nerve, no breath is taken from outside. In this way, Kundalini Shakti moves upward through all the chakras in the subtle body and enters the heart space in the head. When this occurs, the yogi experiences a profound sense of peace and joy and remains focused inside himself with no consciousness of the outside world, is the world beyond. This is the world of Shiva. Now, we've also spoken earlier, allow this Swami to step away from the text. This is also what we refer to as Nirvikalpa Samadhi. In the Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the three, number one, the seer, number two, the means of seeing, either physical or psychic senses, and number three, that which is seen, either an object or a state of consciousness, those three collapse back into the one. And nothing is happening. There is no perceiver, no means of perception, and nothing to perceive. It becomes a blank. It's not falling asleep, because your body will not maintain the proper posture if the body has simply fallen asleep. When in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you will go into this, but everything stops, like shutting off a switch. No thoughts, no sensations, no interpretations of anything can be done while in that state. And when the state ceases and outer or even inner psychic input begins again, and recognition of it, then nirvi kalpa has ended, and you can look at a clock and go, oh, I was gone for, you know, X amount of time, whether it be a few moments, hours, days, whatever. This nirvi kalpa samadhi is a purification process and absolutely necessary. But it is not the end. Let us continue. Verse 57. Nityananda said, this world means jivatman, individuated. The, quote, next world means the union of jivatman and paramatman. Acharya Kedar's commentary. The jiva, or jivatman, is the individual bound soul who creates endless karmas out of ignorance of the truth. This world appearance is the realm or plane, the jiva. It exists for the sport of Shiva in that it is a play of divine consciousness in which these karmas are being worked out as part of the free evolution of beings. The, quote, next world is the world in which the jiva becomes Shiva by merging their individual limited identity with the divine consciousness of Shiva. Shak absolute. Okay, we're talking now about the divine consciousness of Shiva Shakti. Keep in mind, Shiva represents absolute stillness, silence, nothing. From Shiva arises Shakti, energy, movement, participation, appearance of separation. All activity happens within Shakti. And Shiva is not changed in any way by Shakti, either coming or going. This union is what is being referred to here as the next world. For the purposes of this conversation and interacting with this woman, another way of thinking of this in the more new agey or esoteric terms would begin the discussion of realms other than the physical. Okay? So when you drop the physical, you enter the astral or the subtle. Then beyond that is the causal, and then beyond that is the supra-causal. Many, many, many traditions will have all kinds of different names for this. And there are many different ways of speaking about these various realms. Okay? They all exist. It's all very real. It's just subtle. And the rules change. And perhaps at some point, the Swami will go into a deeper conversation relative to the specific realms. But for now, we'll do the bottom of the hour break. Sonic, if you've got a question from anything we've covered thus far today, then hit the question jingle. If not, just come out of the tune without the jingle, and I'll go back into the text. Thank you.
Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva.
After that,
yeah,
based on verse 59, yes,
yeah,
okay, great. I'm into it. Verse 59,
oh, no, 58. Did we do 58 just there? I thought,
oh, no, 58. You're right, I skipped ahead too far. 58, okay, verse 58, Nityananda said. Just as small rivers enter the sea, our attention must be fixed on the internal breath. Acharya Kedar's commentary. Every river eventually merges with the ocean. In the same way, every person will eventually have to retrace his or her path back to God. The internal breath is the means, which means the way this is done. The internal breath is the movement of prana inside the sushumna nadi. Through internal breathing, or sushumna breathing, Kundalini Shakti is channeled into the Sahasrara, which is the crown chakra up top of the skull. When our attention is focused on internal breathing, individual consciousness is united with God, and just as the small rivers enter the sea, our limited identity is merged in the ocean of divine consciousness. Okay, that ends the commentary portion. Sonic, your question?
Yeah, well, I was meditating this week on stripping away the parts of me that I identify as myself. And once I sort of dissolved everything, and all that I was left with was the attention, the awareness.
Right.
So that's and I hadn't until seeing this question or this verse. I was unaware that this was going to come up.
No. Well, see how finesse that is.
So, and it was like the as it in the first stanza there, just the small rivers entered the sea, and it was that type of experience where everything it was just absorbed, and all that was there was the attention.
Right, the direct awareness.
Yeah.
Which at the moment you become aware of awareness itself, there is nothing for it to focus on but itself.
And also, I didn't just take the just as myself. I did it for everything else, like so, the house that I'm in, the planet that I'm on, the space.
Right. Any of the additional overlying descriptors peeled back.
Yeah.
To find the original state of the pure awareness that was there prior to the addition of any of these transitory descriptors. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So whether it's physical body and the inherent name that comes with it, and then a history, and then a location for the body, and then objects within the surroundings of the body, and then mental operations associated with the individuated mind that's associated with that body. That's another whole level of stuff.
And I was interested to find that when, once I'd finished the meditation and was interacting with other folks on this planet, that I was sort of having a bit of a little giggle to myself going, you're me.
Yeah. You've just forgotten. I've seen it for myself. Wish I could tell you, but I really can't, or else you'll want to hit me. But that's kind of how it goes. And the objective to not, to have that as an experience that lasts for an afternoon or whatever is very nice. But that's just a glimpse. There's more beyond even that that is accessible to people and to anyone who pursues meditation in a dedicated, consistent way, because all kinds of sound effects, all kinds of light effects and appearance of other places, other beings, all of that is the scenery as we go by, and none of that is the goal. None of it. It's just the stuff you see along the way as you're going home. And you can get as caught up in it as you choose, or you can just go, oh, hey, that was cool, and keep pressing on home. You know?
And that's why we call it appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Because it appears and then dissolves.
Right, right. If it can come and go, it ain't the goal. Because the goal has never changed. It was, is, and always will be exactly the same. It is the one thing that cannot change. And then once you hit it, it's so difficult to even find words to speak about it. Because you see that any word that is chosen is therefore a limitation and cannot carry the whole of what is.
And just going back to the commentary, we sort of reiterate, just as the small rivers enter the sea, our limited identity is merged with the ocean of divine consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had this sense that individually we are divine beings. We are, as this says, we are the divine, but just being. We are already the divine.
Right, right.
Being, playing out.
We are a bit, through the bodies, we are a bit of the divine consciousness, having drank the cup of forgetfulness. So that, within the play of consciousness, we can take on the role of the experiencer, the doer, the one creating karma. That's what it's for. It's not a punishment. It's an opportunity to explore all of consciousness.
It's amazing what's packed in just that little sentence, isn't it?
Welcome to the Sutra ways of teaching, right? Once you get somebody... See, the sutras are laid down for us by those with enormous knowledge. And then left. That's it. Then along for the thinking person, along comes someone who knows what that means and then sits down and applies their knowledge to it and comes up with commentary. Ah, which then kind of bridges the gap between the direct knower who can just toss a sentence off and then a seeker who is primarily mentally endowed and cannot really get anything directly from the sutra. But when a knower, when a jnani comes to the sutra and begins to write commentary, that's how this works. And that's why this type of teaching has gone on for thousands and thousands of years, because it works. And many, many commentators will come and go relative to a specific sutra, you know? And that commentator will be able to speak and unpack these sutras based on their experience and their understanding and their circumstances and their environment. So they'll be able to help the sutra itself make sense to those living around them and at the same time.
So the sutras are like diamonds, and the commentaries are the different facets of the diamond.
Yes. That's a good way to say it, yeah.
And just what we've just discussed there, is exactly the next verse.
Yep, verse 59. Nityananda said, what is visible is transient. It is perishable. When the mind is merged in Bindu and Nada, okay, now in this case, let me step away from the text for a moment. Bindu is the inner light, which will show up right in the third eye area, just above the brows. And this is a very real thing that if you do your practice well, you'll perceive it yourself. So that's the Bindu. And then the Nada is a sound which takes place and is not able to be heard outside of you. It is heard within your own head. When the mind is merged in Bindu and Nada, Nirvikalpa Samadhi is attained. I was speaking about Nirvikalpa, the blankness of it, a while ago. Our attention is then entirely towards Ananda, eternal joy. Fixing the attention between the eyebrows, the prana should enter the holy Brahmarandra. Here, the light of lights becomes visible to the divine eye. This is mukti. Mukti means freedom. This is eternally supreme joy. This is the place where the manas, and by manas he's referring to mind, ought to dwell. This is the eternal being whence the Vedas have sprung. This is seeing Paramatman in all, or seeing God in everything. This is the real place of Jivatman, the individual who is now beginning to merge into its divine nature. The commentary by Acharya Kedar. This world appearance is transient and temporary. It is perishable because it is an illusion of Maya. When the mind is merged in Bindunada, the firm point of sound, that is the vibration of Spanda Shakti in the crown chakra in the head, up at the top of your skull, all thoughts cease. The notion of a world is erased, and Nirvikalpa Samadhi is the result. Our attention is then turned entirely within, and we experience our own bliss, our own eternal joy. By fixing one's attention on the command center of the third eye, known as the Ajna chakra, with the proper instruction from a siddha, one can direct the exhalation of the breath upward into the crown chakra in the head. Here, there is the light of a thousand suns that is visible inside one's own being. This is liberation. This is where endless supreme joy can be tasted. A yogi should keep his mind one-pointed on this inner light and sound. It is from this perfect state that the Vedas and all sacred texts have been realized. This is the state where one sees God in everything and everyone everywhere. This is where the jiva, the individual, should travel and roam. Stepping away from the text for a moment, allow this Swami to share the fact that when this Swami body closes the eyes, there is no darkness. I have a head full of light, blue light to be most specific. That took some getting used to. But when you merge the light with the sound, the naga, it becomes something else, something indescribable. And for some, weird things happen. Visions may come. Kinetic experiences may come. The body may levitate a few inches while you're meditating. That's very normal. It's not something you're doing. It's something you might observe is happening. The body can become breathless and simply stop breathing. That's a little spooky the first time it happens. But you're completely safe. Your mind might get worked up because certain things are occurring that are not part of your normal daily practices or activities. But these are most pure, very natural, and are not a problem at all. What can become a problem is when we seek to replicate these situations, be they breathlessness or levitation or any of these things, for the purpose of impressing other people. That's when we get ourselves in trouble, because that's not what they're for. Even though it could be utilized in that way, 99.9% of the time for the yogi who goes and uses that kind of stuff for that purpose, it turns out badly. That's not what it's for. And there have been numerous yogis whose names I could mention, but I won't, who have gained abilities, and their gurus have had to strip them of those abilities because they turned it into something that their ego got attached to. Oh, hey, I can do this. Watch this. You know, and they just wanted to impress people or get money with it or get laid with it or whatever. You know, I mean, it's not what these things are for. And they can bring tremendous bad karma to the one who tries to utilize them in that way. Because while those things are going on, you're not yet free. You've made progress for sure. But far better to let any of these occurrences just come and go. Whatever. Don't get attached to it, because I guarantee you weren't doing it when it happened. It just happened. Don't allow the ego to attach to some unusual happening and then think, oh, I'm this because of this happened. No, don't do that. Don't do that. You will drag ego into a perfect and natural process, and it will cause trouble. Always does. The greatest masters who have ever lived can do all kinds of this stuff. They just don't care about it. And if it does take place around them, they don't care about that either. Okay, whatever. Because you can reach such a point of perfection that the powers just wait for their opportunity to come out and play. But most will hold them back. No, no. Don't do that. Don't do that. No. See, because yoga is a great deal about control. Not simply losing yourself and then letting your ego take over, which it very often does. It's part of the process. Verse 60. The real place of jiva is formless, indivisible. God pervades all things, movable and immovable. He is the one without a second. God is the origin of the Vedas. He is the Lord of the body. He is the Lord of the Jivan Mukti. The Jivan Mukti is one who is liberated while living. Man, to be man, must meditate upon God, the commentary by Acharya Kedar. In truth, the jiva does not exist. Jiva is an illusion, since it is Shiva, the formless God himself, who takes on the form of the forgetful jiva. Nothing exists anywhere that is not Shiva. God pervades all things, both sentient and insentient. Shiva is the one, without a second even possible. He is the origin of the Vedas and all other scriptures and sacred texts. All forms belong to him. All names belong to him, including the body you are listening through right now, which is on loan from him. Shiva is the Lord of liberation, the place of deliverance. Human beings, in order to be truly human, must meditate on Shiva. We'll wrap up the show there for today. Thank you very much, Sonic, for your input. Great question.
Namaste.
Namaste. And blessings. Om Namo Narayana. Sadguru Nath Maharaj Jai.